Jim slept little that night, while the wind buffeted the house and rattled the window frames. He was up long before the rest of the household. In the kitchen he poured a mug of bitter black coffee from the enamel kettle that always stood on the back of the stove. It was still dark as he went down to the stables and led out Drumfire. He rode down to the seashore, and as he and the horse topped the dunes, the full force of the wind came at them out of the darkness like a ravening monster. He took Drumfire back behind the shelter of the dunes and tethered him to a low saltbush, then climbed again on foot to the crest. He wrapped his cloak closer around his shoulders and pulled his wide-brimmed hat low over his eyes as he squatted and waited for the first show of dawn. He thought about the girl. She had shown herself to be quick-witted, but was she sensible enough to realise that no small boat could come out to the anchorage in the bay until the storm abated? Would she understand that he was not deserting her? The low scudding clouds delayed the dawn, and even when it broke it could hardly illuminate the wild scene before him. He stood up and had to lean into the wind as though he were crossing a fast-flowing river. He held onto his hat with both hands and searched for a glimpse of the Dutch ship. Then, far out, he saw a flash of something not as evanescent as the leaping foam and spray that strove to extinguish it. He watched it avidly, and it persisted, constant in this raging seascape. "A sail!" he cried, and the wind tore the words from his lips. However, it was not where he had expected to find the Mieux. This was a ship under sail, not lying at anchor. He must know if this was the Mieux trying to fight her way out of the bay, or if it was one of the other ships that had been anchored there. His small hunting telescope was in his saddlebag. He turned and ran back through the soft sand to where he had left Drumfire out of the wind. When he reached the crest again, he searched for the ship. It took him minutes to find her, but then her sails flashed at him again. He sat flat in the sand, and using his knees and elbows like a tripod to steady himself against the buffeting of the wind, he trained the lens on the distant ship. He picked up her sails, but the swells obscured the hull until suddenly a freak combination of wave and wind lifted her high. "It's her!" There was no doubt left. "Het gelukkige Mieux!" He was swamped by an enervating sense of doom. Before his eyes, Louisa was being carried away to some foul prison at the far ends of the earth, and there was nothing he could do to prevent it happening. "Please, God, don't take her from me so soon," he prayed in despair. But the distant ship battled on through the storm, close-hauled, her captain trying to get clear of the deadly lee shore. Through the lens, Jim watched her with a seaman's eye. Tom had taught him well, and he understood all the forces and counter-forces of wind, keel, and sail. He saw how close to disaster she was hovering. The light strengthened, and even with the naked eye he could make out the detail of this dreadful contest of ship against storm. After another hour she was still locked in the bay, and Jim trained the telescope from the ship onto the black shark-like shape of Robben Island that guarded the exit. Every minute that passed made it more apparent that the Mieux could not break out into the open sea on this tack. The captain would have to come about. He had no alternative. The bottom under him was already too deep for him to drop anchor again, and the storm was pushing him down inexorably onto the rocks of the island. If he went aground there, the hull would be smashed to splinters. "Go about!" Jim jumped to his feet. "Tack now! You're going to murder them, you idiot!" He meant both the ship and the girl. He knew that Louisa would still be battened down below, and even if by some miracle she escaped from the gun deck, the chains around her ankles would drag her under as soon as she went over the side. Doggedly the ship held her course. The manoeuvre of bringing such an ungainly ship about, in the weather, would entail terrible risk, but soon the captain must realise that no other course lay open to him. "It's too late!" Jim agonised. "It's already too late!" Then he saw it begin to happen, the sails slanting and their silhouette altering as she turned her head to the storm. He watched her through the lens, his hand shaking as her turn slowed. At last she hung there, caught in stays, with all her sails flogging and hammering, unable to complete the turn onto the other tack. Then Jim saw the next squall bearing down on her. The sea boiled at the foot of the racing curtain of rain and wind, which caught her and laid the ship over until her bottom planking showed, thick and filthy with weed and barnacles. Then the squall smothered her. She was gone, as though she had never existed. In anguish, Jim watched for her to reappear. She might have turned turtle to float keel uppermost, or she might even have been trodden right under. There was no way for him to know. His eye burned and his vision blurred with the intensity of his stare through the lens of the telescope. It seemed to take an age for the squall to pass. Then, abruptly, the ship appeared again, but it seemed that it could not be the same vessel. So drastically had her silhouette altered. "Dismasted," Jim groaned. Though tears brought on by strain and wind ran through his cheeks, he could not take his eye from the lens. "Main and fore, she's lost both masts." Only the mizzen poked up from the rolling hull and the tangle of sails and masts hanging over her side barely slowed her as she paid off before the wind. It swept her back into the bay, clear of the rocks of Robben Island, but straight towards the thundering surf on the beach below where Jim stood. Swiftly, Jim calculated the distance, angles, and speed. "She'll be on the beach in less than an hour," he whispered to himself. "God help all those on board when she strikes." He lowered the telescope and, with the back of his arm, wiped the wind tears from his cheek. "And most of all, God help Louisa." He tried to imagine the conditions on the gun deck of the Mew at that moment, but his imagination balked.